Save Me Thousands is brought to you in part by RP Funding. RP Funding Inc. is licensed and can offer loans in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Louisiana, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia. And is also licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance and by the Pennsylvania Department of Banking and Securities. Office is located at 500 Winterly Place, Suite 300, Maitland, Florida, 32751. Telephone 321-397-4420. RP Funding's nationwide mortgage licensing system ID number is 70168, Equal Housing Opportunity. And Robert Palmer's NMLS ID number is 76197.
We're saving thousands with Robert Palmer, right here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network. Robert Palmer is an author, widely known radio and television personality, and a public speaker dedicated to helping you take charge of your finances. In the next hour, you'll find yourself a lot more understanding and a lot more comfortable about your money. All right, Robert, let's go to the phones. We have Jennifer from Inverness on the line. So, Jennifer, how can Robert Palmer help you?
I have a second mortgage. It's not secured. It's about $30,000. And I was offered by a company to, I don't know what they were going to do, but they were going to do away with the loan for $6,000. Is that legitimate?
Okay, so you said the second mortgage is not securitized. Is that because you had a bankruptcy, or why is it no longer attached to the property?
I'm sorry.
So it is still actually attached to your property? Oh, we lost Jennifer. Okay. Jennifer, pretty much if I understand the question, if this is a third-party company out there that's offering to somehow get your second mortgage absolved for $6,000, I don't know that I would trust that. If it's the actual mortgage company, if it's the actual lender who is telling you they'll settle the second mortgage for that cheap, I think that's good. At the end of the day, it really just depends. There are second mortgage holders out there that when the house is upside down and they no longer have a security interest, or we see this a lot in the case of Chapter 13 bankruptcy. When you file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, sometimes that second mortgage can actually be detached from the property or basically where it has no longer has a security interest in the property. And at that point, we've seen banks that are willing to come in and do those for reduced amounts and settle them for much less. It depends on the situation they're in. So again, if it's the bank that you make your payments to every month who's offering to settle the loan for $6,000, I would say go for it. If it's any other third-party company, it sounds like it may be a little fishy, and I would be weary of that, and I would reach out to the bank you make your payments to and figure out if they're affiliated with that company or what their thoughts are on the idea of settling that debt for less than amount due.
You know, I've been really watching so much of the news lately about housing, and it just seems to me like your advice on follow-up is so right on, Robert, because it looks like with all this going on with the latest settlement, the $28 billion, whatever it is, and the other settlements, there's probably going to be some miscreants coming out of the wood writing you a letter saying, oh, we can help you through this, only send us $5,000 and we'll get it all done for you.
Yeah, you know, we see this. My advice to people is, one, obviously do your research online. You know, check it out. Google the company's name with scam or fraud, you know, reviews. Check it out. Make sure it's legitimate. Number two, if anyone is offering to help you save your home from foreclosure, get a modification, anything like that, you know, you've really got two choices when it comes to saving money. A is refinance with a mortgage lender, and you want to make sure that mortgage lender is licensed. Or B, talking to an attorney to try to negotiate a modification or a short sale or something like that. And if that's the case, you want to make sure you're working with an attorney who is a licensed attorney and who's a member of the Florida Bar who can legally do that for you. There were these, you know, foreclosure companies that popped up, and they would offer to do these negotiations. They did not have a law degree. They were not lawyers. And a lot of them ended up being scams. And we saw the attorney general having to go in and raid some of these companies. A lot of them were just call center, sweatshop type places where they would take your money, you know, promise you the world, take your money over the phone, and then do absolutely nothing and give a lot of excuses throughout a process that never ended up anywhere. And I mean, we saw a lot of that hit the news a lot over the last couple of years of these companies being shut down. But there's still some out there. And this may be the new thing, going after these people, you know, with second mortgages and saying, hey, we've got a deal for you. Send us a couple $1,000 and we'll wipe out your second mortgage, and you send that money and you never hear from them again. So again, make sure you're working with either the existing lender that you currently make your payments to, or B, working with a licensed mortgage lender, and you can check that out through the National Mortgage Licensing System, the NMLS. Our license number is 70168 if you'd like to check us out, and you can kind of get an idea of how those records read. And then the third is an attorney who is a member of the Florida Bar, and you can check that out on the Florida Bar website as well. Read about the attorney, see how long they've been licensed, that type of thing. If you're not dealing with one of those three entities, I would be hesitant to give money to anyone to do any type of real estate related negotiations or save your home or negotiate a debt or anything along those lines.
how we were talking to RJ during the break, for those of you in Orlando that missed this, and he was kind enough to say that he, in a divorce situation, he'd like to help his wife, his ex-wife, get the house that they're currently living in. Now, her name's not on anything except maybe the homestead.
Right.
So how does that work? Is she going to get just a separate loan now post divorce, or how's that going to work out?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tough situation. What we're talking to RJ about during the break, you know, he's got his VA eligibility, so he can go out and buy a new home for himself pretty easily.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he would not be able to use his VA eligibility to purchase a home for her. You know, it's one of those things you could probably get away with, but it's really not truthful and in compliance with the language on the VA mortgage. So I would definitely discourage that. I'm sure there's some mortgage companies out there that would happily help him do that. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't meet the language in the VA mortgage. And this really gets down to the issue on both sides. You know, on the other home, you know, in the mortgage, it says that if RJ is no longer living in that home, that, and so if he moves out and the wife is there, and the wife's name's not on the mortgage, so only RJ is on the loan. They're both obviously entitled because they're married. So if RJ moves out, there is a clause in the mortgage that says that if you leave that house and deed it to someone else, that the bank has the right to call the note due. So if RJ takes himself off the deed as a part of the divorce and gives it over to the ex-wife, and she then continues to make payments on RJ's old mortgage, the bank technically has the right to come in and call that mortgage due, because the loan holder has deeded their interest to a third party who they're no longer married to, and they're not making the payments. Now, the likelihood of that happening is very low. You know, I mean, legally and technically, it can happen. I've never seen it happen. You know, we see this in cases where someone passes away and the heirs continue to make payments on the loan. Again, technically, the bank has the right to call that loan due. Like I said, I've never seen it happen. I'm sure it has happened somewhere along the line. But again, as long as the payments are being made, the chance of the bank to come in and call that note due are slim. But legally, based on the language in the mortgage, that is a possibility. And that's really what we try to get people to understand, is there's a lot of things you agree to in that mortgage document.
There's some hard and fast rules out there when it comes to offers out of the blue that will promise you some sort of settlement. First off, as Robert said, use rule number 12 and check that company out 16 ways to Sunday. Another rule, that would be rule number 5, says if you know their tricks, you won't fall for them. As you listen to Robert Palmer, you'll be educated more and more on scams and tricks and what not to fall prey to. Where are these rules? Well, they're part of the 15 Saving Thousands Rules to Success. See, Robert created these guidelines based on many, many years in the financial industry and the thousands of credit reports he reviewed. For your listing of the 15 Saving Thousands Rules to Success, simply log on to savingthousands.com and click on the tab labeled The Rules. Getting back to rule number 5, if you know their tricks, you won't fall for them. One of the worst smoke and mirror examples is
auto pay. And the fancy commercial, everything the financial services industry has put together was built to turn you into a financial zombie who just meanders around, and you bump into a fence and you bump go the other way, or you hear a noise over there and you just turn and meander that way, and you're not paying attention to anything. There's no higher reasoning. There's no conscious thinking when it comes to personal finance. Oh, we're going to turn them all into financial zombies, and then we're going to take advantage of them and make a whole bunch of money. Well, that stops here and now on the Saving Thousands Radio Network. I'm going to turn you all into financial ninjas. We're going to follow the rules. We're going to make better decisions. We're going to save a bunch of money. More importantly, we are not going to be taken advantage of, and we are going to make a difference, because trust me, when they realize this stuff isn't working anymore, they'll stop doing it. It's that simple. How do we fight back and win? We follow the rules. We take back power as consumers. And we force an industry who has been going down a really bad path for probably the last 40 years to reverse course and start putting us first as consumers again.
One of the things that came up the other day that I hope we have a chance to discuss on a lengthy basis is a lot of the commercials now come on and they offer you a bottle of some kind of energy pill or diet pill or live better pill. And they say the first 100 capsules are free to the first 1,000 callers. The problem is, they still ask for your credit card, Robert, and then the 30 days after you got that first bottle, it shows up on your credit card statement, because here comes bottle number 2. Here comes bottle number 3. And when you try to cancel that, it's almost impossible. You have to cancel on the third day of the fifth week of the fourth moon or something, and you never get it out of your credit. Kind of like that problem you had with that credit card company so many years ago.
Yeah, let me tell you, convenience is code for we're going to screw you. All right? I mean, maybe I'll make that a rule. You know, no one, honestly, look, they don't care about your convenience, all right? But what they know is auto pay, you know, they call those continuity programs, by the way, Rob.
I didn't know what it was called.
It's a huge, I mean, in the marketing world, it's called continuity programs.
I know.
It's a huge way for companies to make money. I mean, the auto bill, it's the auto pay with a product attached to it. But anything that you think makes your life more convenient, right? We've talked about online bill pay or online statements, right? Why do the credit card companies push you so hard toward online statements? They claim it's to save the environment.
Oh, yes.
They claim it's for your own convenience, but in reality, it's to hide a bunch of disclaimers from you that were made a requirement under the CARD Act that was passed a couple years ago, where they have to put in big, bold print how much you're spending in interest and how much faster you could pay that card off if you just sent a couple extra dollars, and that's required to be in big, bold print on the PDF or the downloaded statement. So what are they going to do? They're going to drive you a little snapshot screen on your mobile phone that doesn't have that information in the name of convenience, in the name of the environment. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about your personal convenience. They care about making money off of you. All right, let's not confuse any of this. So this is all about financial zombie. Yeah, give me your credit card and just let me bill you whenever I want. Give me your bank account and let me draft the payment whenever I want. Car insurance, homeowner's insurance, all of these things, because what they know, and they test this, how much can we charge them before they realize it and get wise, right? So let's bump them $5. Let's bump them $8. Let's bump them $3. Let's try to figure out how much we can get away with before somebody wakes up and says, whoa, this is too expensive. I didn't agree to pay this. Right. But they know with auto pay, you're a financial zombie. You're just out there meandering around looking for the next brain to chew on and not paying attention to where your money's going.
I figured out another thing after we had that discussion the other day. If you simply get it on your smartphone, you only look it up when you're thinking about it. But you know, if that bill arrives in the mail and you put it in your hot little hands, you're going to probably pay it the right time, the way you've taught them to pay it. But if it's just somewhere out there in a cloud and you've got to go find it, what about my First Omaha bank account?
Yep.
Well, when does it due? Well, I haven't thought about that because it's not in my hand.
Yeah, technology has made us lazy, and financial services companies, credit card companies, banks have realized that they can capitalize on our laziness, right? I mean, why do people not shop around? Laziness.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, you know? Or even worse, they think they're shopping around, but they're using websites that are on the take and only showing the cards or the items that pay them money. You know, like, so how about this? You know, bankrate.com, right?
Sure.
So it's supposed to be a huge resource where you can find the best mortgage. Well, guess whose mortgage you won't find on there? Mine. You won't find RP Funding's rates on there. You won't find a zero closing cost refinance from RP Funding on there. Why? Because I have to pay them a ton of money to be listed there. And I can't pay them and give you a great deal.
That's right.
And so this whole shopping portal thing, again, it's smoke and mirrors. It's to confuse you. It's tricks. And so you've got to do it yourself, or you've got to do it with a trusted resource, right?
That brings us again to rule number 12, urging us to check out companies before doing business with them. And add to that rule number 1, always shop around. You know, you stand a much better chance of not being ripped off. Well, last week we talked about items on our credit report, good items and bad items. And we have a question from a listener who wants to know, if I pay off and close an account that had previously been reported as delinquent, will it be removed from my credit report faster, or will it just stay there to haunt me? Kind of reminds me of that $3 past due on your Discover card years ago. You closed that as soon as you found out.
And so one, I will tell you, and again, I don't have hard proof of this, but from my experimenting and tinkering with credit reporting, once you close an account, the fact that it was previously delinquent hurts you less.
Okay.
Right. So if I had kept that Discover card open and kept using it and carried a balance on it, one, I believe that the late would have had a more lasting negative impact on my credit score. See, I paid it off in full and closed it, and my score bounced back almost completely in 2 months. Right.
Man.
Had I not paid it off and closed it, had I continued to carry a balance, had I left it out there, I think the score calculation would have put more weight on it.
Uh-huh.
But now here I am. So I paid it off immediately. I closed it. I have not been a customer of Discover in 5 years. and I will never be a customer of Discover again because they didn't call me or anything. They just let me go 30 days late on $3, which I understand was my responsibility to know. But come on, they could have helped me out. They could have made a phone call. They could have done something, right? Or over a $3 payment, whatever. So I have not been a customer of theirs in 5 years. Do we think they still have full records on me? I don't know. I'm going to find out.
Those could be in a cave under Kansas
City. I'm going to find
somewhere.
Out because I'm going to dispute because I still believe I was wronged when Discover reported me 30 days late on this $3 payment, which I don't even think I owed because I think I paid it in full. Like, it was just weird the way it showed up, right?
Sure.
And so I still believe I did not owe a payment at that moment. And so I'm going to dispute this. I'm going to dispute it today after the show. And then I'm going to let our listeners know what happens. And we're going to see if Discover... Now, I disputed it at the time, and I lost, right? Like, I immediately paid it off, closed it, and disputed it. And 30 days later, it came back, and they said back to the bureaus, nope, this is legit, and whatever. I kind of gave up at that point. My score rebounded pretty quickly, so I didn't sweat it too much.
Sure.
But it's still this thorn in my side, right? And I will never have a Discover card for the rest of my life because of it. It just angers me. But I'm going to try disputing it, and we're going to see what happens. Because
be
I think it's been long enough that maybe they've upgraded their database. Maybe they've put some a new archiving system in place. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they deleted me completely. Because, again, I haven't owed money in a long time. Like, why? What motivation do they have to keep my records?
Yeah.
Now, there are some record retention requirements, but most of those apply to people who still owe you money. And I don't think any regulator requires – like, I know in the mortgage industry, we're required to keep records for 3 years – from the last payment received.
All right.
So I couldn't imagine that a credit card company would have higher record retentions than a mortgage.
No way.
And I don't know. I'll research that as well. So there's a really good chance that they've just purged me from the system because it's been 5 years and I don't owe them any money. So those are the keys I want everybody to think about. If you're going to dispute stuff on your credit, if you owe them money, it's not going to work. Now, the other piece to this is, and this is good and this is bad. So when you dispute something during the dispute process, it is taken out of your credit score calculation, all right? So you can get this artificial inflation of your credit. So think about that, folks. This is very important. If you have a bankruptcy or a foreclosure or anything, if you dispute that item, and now there's a 30-day process, and during that 30-day process of being reviewed, it will say in dispute on your credit, right? Creditor disputes or, you know, whatever. During that time, when they send your file over to FICO to get scored, they don't send that record with it. So what happens, and this is the gimmick, and I'm going to tell you why this doesn't really do you any good and doesn't work, but this is the gimmick that a lot of these credit repair companies use. They will dispute everything negative on your credit and then repull your credit score and be like, look, your credit score is now a 780. Because everything negative says in dispute and is not being transmitted to FICO for the score calculation. So all they're sending them is like the one or two accounts you have that are perfect.
Oh.
And so your credit score comes back perfect. And now let me tell you, we creditors are not stupid. Mortgage companies are not stupid. Credit card companies are not stupid. And so I know in particular in the mortgage business, if you have accounts that are in dispute, we have to have you undispute them and rescore your credit before closing. So let me walk you through what can be a really ugly scenario. So you have a 580 credit score because you have a bunch of collections and credit cards with late payments. But then you have a car loan and a couple credit cards that were perfect. And so you have a really low score. And so you go to one of these credit repair companies and they dispute everything on your credit except for the car loan that was never late and the credit cards that were never late and that aren't maxed out. Mm-hmm. And they dispute everything and it all gets taken out of your credit score and they rescore you and now you have a 750. And you're like, oh man, I am a credit god. I have a 750. I'm going to buy a house. So you go call the local mortgage guy and you call one where they don't have any type of oversight or validation on their pre-approval process. And the loan officer, he's sitting home in his boxer shorts eating Cheetos, and the phone rings, and he answers it, and he pulls your credit report, and all he sees is your score is 750, and he doesn't even scroll down to look at your credit because he can't be bothered with details like that, right? And this is the type of stuff an underwriter would do. They would scroll down and look. The sales guy, he's not going to look. He's going to say, 750, hallelujah, I got me a winner, and he's going to issue you a pre-approval.
Right.
And you're going to go get a house under contract, and you're going to come back in, And then the file's going to go to underwriting. The underwriter's going to say, oh, well, per Fannie Mae guideline number 2798254, we have to undispute all of these accounts and rescore the file before we can close. So now they go to you and say, hey, you have to undispute all these accounts. And you're like, what do you mean? And you go to your credit repair guy and you say, hey, we got to undispute all these accounts before I can close on my new house. Or maybe the 30 days, because at the end of 30 days, the dispute ends one way or the other.
Right.
So maybe it's just been long enough, the 30 days naturally happens. And all the disputes go away. And guess what? All the stuff is still there because you still owed them the money. And they still cared enough, right? Now, some of the ones that you had paid off, they probably fell off. So that may help you a little bit. But the people you still owe money to, they are absolutely going to return an answer to stay on your credit. And your score is going to go back down to a 580. Guess what happens next? You get denied.
So you really don't need a credit repair company. All they're going to do is dispute everything on the credit report and take your money. It's best to pay off the delinquent accounts as soon as possible and close those things altogether. You know, Robert, it's scary how hard these people in the financial industries try to take our money. I don't mean all of them, but it seems like every day we hear of somebody. I don't see why they can't just do business above board and put out the best product and service they can. I mean, look at your success. Seems like that's the best policy.
If we are empowered as consumers, right, we talk a lot about the smoke and mirrors route. We talk a lot about the financial services gimmicks and tricks and how they try to take advantage of us. And they'll hide it under the guise of something good, like, oh, we're trying to save the environment, so we're going to quit mailing you statements. When in reality, they're trying to make you blind to the fact of how much interest you're paying. You know, there's all these tricks and misinformation. And we've got to cut through that, because the only way we're going to stop being financial zombies, the only way we're going to reverse this wave of being asleep at the wheel, of burying our head in the sands, of being a financial robot just on autopilot, just going through the motions, taking whatever little increases they get us because of auto pay, you know, taking the first deal we're offered on a mortgage or a credit card, signing up for a credit card while we're in line at a department store because we're not thinking, we're caught up in the moment. The whole point of this show, the whole reason that I'm out here trying to get my voice heard by hundreds of thousands of people, and it's all about empowering the consumer. It's about giving the consumer access to the information that they need. It's about exposing the dirty tricks. It's about exposing, you know, think about that, Rob, with a magic trick, right? Once you know the trick, it doesn't work anymore, right?
So this
is actually one of our rules, is that once you know the trick, right? So this is This is rule number five. So rule number five is, if you know their tricks, they won't work. And so if you know the reason they don't want to mail you your credit card statement and they want you to go online where they can hide the interest rates and hide the amount of interest, is because they know you'll pay your card off faster if you're empowered with information, you can fix it. You can download the PDF. You can calculate the interest yourself. You can do things. You know, I remember when I was a kid, the first magic trick I think I ever saw, I was probably like in elementary school. And, you know, so a buddy pulls out, has a deck of cards, right? And so he tells me to take a card. And then he starts passing the cards, you know, like from one hand to the other, like kind of moving them one at a time. Mm-hmm. And he says, whenever you want me to, I say stop and then slide your card in there. And so he's going and he says stop and he slides the card in there. And then he does something, whatever. And then he shows me back my card. And I remember being completely blown away. Right. And so finally, like, I bugged him. And I was like, man, you got to show me how you did that. And so basically he was just counting, like, as he was moving the cards, he was counting them. 1, 2, 3, 4, you know. So like when he said stop, he knew that I slid my card in after card number 20. So therefore card number 21 was my card. And so all he had to do was go back and count to card number 21 and show me my card.
I never knew how that worked,
right?
Until now.
And so, you know, and I look back, I'm like, man, how stupid was I? Like, I probably could have seen his lips moving as he was counting. Like, we're little kids, right? Like, he's probably like mouthing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. As he's moving the cards, but I'm throwing thralled in the trick and his mystical powers, right? But then as soon as you look at it again, you're like, this is the stupidest thing I have ever seen. How did this ever work on me? But it does. And that is the exact thing that financial services companies have figured out. It's the smoke and mirrors. It's the trick. And that's why it's so important that consumers understand, you know, rule number five. Once you know their tricks, they don't work anymore. And so the whole purpose of this show, the whole reason I come on here every day, is to try to expose those tricks and to try to give people right information.
Well, Robert, we're up against a hard break, so we're going to have to cut it short right here. But we'll be back in a few minutes, everybody, as you save thousands with Robert Palmer.